It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll hear about some new programming and twists on existing shows here on Wisconsin Public Radio. First, many people have had to deal with the disappointment of canceling travel plans over the last few months, and future travel plans are still up in the air. But hardly anyone has had to cancel as many of those plans as Rick Steves, travel writer and public television host of Rick Steves Europe. He'd expected to host more than 30,000 tourists on more than 1,000 bus tours through October. But in a recent piece in The Atlantic, he writes that he's learning some valuable lessons about using a traveler's mindset in his everyday life. Rick, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Nice to be with you.
Well, Rick, you travel as a way of life, as your job, in so many ways. Has it dawned on you that that was going to be off the table for the foreseeable future? What went through your head?
Oh, no, this really blindsided me. I was, as you mentioned, my work was just ramping up. Last year was our best year ever. We took 30,000 people on our bus tours around Europe. My guidebooks were just jamming. I think 25 out of the top 30 guidebooks in the United States to Europe had my name on the cover. And I had just hosted 100 of my guides at my office here in Seattle. And that was back in, I think, late January. And we were just euphoric. It was going to be our best year ever. And then, we had this big week-long workshop with our guides. They all flew home. You know, we were almost sold out for our tours. And then just like a tsunami, it just swept through us. And now we've had zero revenue. My guides are unemployed in Europe. And I've got 100 people on my staff here in Seattle that we're still together. But we're just hunkered down and trying to be patient and doing our best. You know, it's... we've been through a lot of crises in 30 years of leading groups around Europe and writing guidebooks and so on, but nothing like this. And I look out my window and I just have to remember, for a lot of people, they wish they had tours of Europe to cancel. And, life is tough across the board. So we're all in this together and we have to stay together and be a good community.
Well, you write that you've been able to think about travel and the traveler's mindset and why we do it. With this time on your hands, what kind of realizations have you come to?
Yeah, well, it's occurred to me, and I've never had to think about this before, because for the last 30 years, I've spent 100 days in Europe. This is my first summer home in 30 years. And I'm realizing that you don't need to get on an airplane to be a traveler. To me, there's a traveler's mindset, Rob, and it's a curiosity, it's an openness, it's a eagerness to get out of our comfort zone and try something different. I've been able to actually employ that sort of mindset here at home, and I find that it's really an important life skill. So, you know, I've had more people, interview me and have me on their TV or radio shows. Ironically, when I'm home not traveling, when I am doing my thing in Europe. And we're all locked down to a certain degree. And a lot of us have had our hopes and dreams dashed and carefully laid plans derailed. And I'm certainly in that category. But I think it's a chance for us to pause. I'm sort of addicted to productivity and I'm kind of a workaholic. And this is therapy for somebody who's addicted to productivity. It's God's way of reminding us to just take a breath and slow down. And there's other things in life, and we have a lot to be thankful for.
Well, I've done something that you've done and lots of people have done. Instead of getting on a plane or going on a road trip, I've gone for a ton of walks around my neighborhood. And you have done that with a traveler's eye. Can you share with the rest of us how to, take what seems really familiar and think of our backyard as a travel opportunity?
Well, yeah. I mean, just the other day I was walking home and I saw a snail on my neighbor's fence. And I got to admit, all I could think was escargot. You know, I'd love to be in France having some escargot right now. But for me, I've just been astounded, frankly, at how many dimensions to life I was not respecting, not appreciating, oblivious to. Very basic stuff. I almost feel embarrassed that I didn't know how to use my oven. You know, I'm a busy person. I just have leftover takeout food and so on. And I'm just love my work and I'm focused on that. But now I'm learning how to cook. I had not turned on my oven in the 8 years I've owned this house. And now I'm friends with my oven. I cut through an onion at the beginning of this COVID lockdown. And I realized I've never felt a knife cutting through a nice crispy onion before. And I almost like jumped for joy. It was like one of the things I experienced in Europe for my first time, but right at home. I've never really understood people who, have dogs as a big part of their life. I have to admit, I didn't even have a healthy attitude about that. Now dogs are a big part of my life. I've got a hummingbird feeder on my deck. I'm doing different things. I dusted off my trumpet. It's been in darkness since I was in college, and I'm playing my trumpet when the sun goes down for my neighborhood. You know, it's taps time every time the sun goes down, and it's just sort of a celebration of life that we can do right here. And I do think it's very important. One beautiful thing, or not beautiful, one instructive thing about this whole pandemic is a reminder that this pandemic does not recognize different borders, different ethnic groups, different economic classes. I mean, we're all in this together. And, when you walk out, you realize this is a community, and there's a lot of people struggling in ways that we might not be mindful of. And it's just a great opportunity to embrace the simple things and be positive and recognize that we need each other and we need our environment, and we're all in this together. You know, we get that when we travel. We can also get that when we employ a traveler's mindset right here at home.
We're talking to travel writer Rick Steves, public television host of Rick Steves Europe. He's talking about taking a traveler's mindset into a slower pace of life during the pandemic, appreciating the things in and around our own homes. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you found new ways to appreciate your time in your hometown? A new hobby, or picking up an old one, maybe looking at your local area through new eyes? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Share some more thoughts, Rick, of lessons you've picked up as a traveler around the world and how to capture that traveler mentality even when we're not hopping on the plane to go somewhere.
Well, it is really the cool thing about travel is travel lets you celebrate different things. It gets you out of your comfort zone. I always like to say it carbonates your life. Well, you know, I grew up thinking, cheese was no big deal. For me, when I was a kid, cheese was orange and the shape of the bread. And then you go to France and, these cheese shops are just festivals of mold. And the cheesemonger is evangelical. And his favorite thing is to find an American bumpkin and introduce him to the greatest cheese. I'm sure in Wisconsin, people appreciate cheese. And you go to Europe and you realize a lot of people spend a lot of money for fancy, stinky cheese. Now, you don't have to do that. But when you come home, you have that option to be excited about stinky, expensive cheese. And I really appreciate that. I don't need to embrace these ideas when I get home, but it's nice to know that they're really important for other people. When I travel, I try to be a cultural chameleon. That means I almost physically change. When I never go home after a long day of work here in Seattle and feel like a nice cloudy glass of ouzo. But when I'm in Greece, you know, after a long day of sightseeing, I love to sit down and watch the boats in the harbor and nurse a nice cloudy glass of ouzo. I don't really understand tea in this hemisphere, but when I'm in England, I love a spot of tea, you know, and when I'm in Scotland, I have a little nip of whiskey every evening. And when I'm in Tuscany, I have a nice corposo, a nice full-bodied glass of red wine. I don't feel like a nice corposo glass of red wine in Norway, and I certainly don't feel like that in Ireland, but in Ireland, I feel like a Guinness. So, that's the joy of travel. It gets us out of our comfort zone, and you almost have to do it when you're on the road. But you can do that right here at home, too. And again, that just it just makes your life have more colors in the palette. It makes the weave of your life a little more interesting. And we can do that. And we need to be bold. We need to try new things. I'm enjoying my piano like never before. I've enjoyed just turning out the lights and playing the piano, just letting chords move me from one direction to another. And it's a new fun little game I play. And I've had my piano ever since I was a kid, but I've never played this chords in the dark game. So we can do that. And again, it's that traveler's mindset. And then when the day comes that we can travel again, we'll be like birds that are let out of the cage. We'll be able to go explore the world and also use that wonderful mindset.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. So I just want to say first, Rick, I love your show. I think it's fantastic. I've learned so much from watching you. But second, I've been watching a whole lot of your episodes on public television here in Milwaukee, and I sit and I draw and paint and get inspiration from some of your travels, and that's really been helping me get through the whole COVID self-isolation or whatever.
Thank you, Marcus. I love that thought. And, you know, one thing we're trying to do right now, because we know a lot of people are frustrated and sort of life is, you know, just difficult this year in so many ways. And we're trying to give people what we call a daily dose of Europe. On my Facebook page, I'm serializing my new book, which is called For the Love of Europe, and it's 100 essays. And every day we have a different essay about Europe. All of our TV shows are available for free anytime streaming on our ricksteves.com website. So we've got 100 different TV shows there. We've even got a program for teachers called Classroom Europe, where I've cut my shows into 500 little teachable, streamable clips, about 5 minutes each. So a teacher can type in water lilies and get everything we've ever done on Monet. And they could type in, you know, Leonardo and get everything we've done about Leonardo da Vinci. And they could type in, bulls and learn about the running of the bulls in Pamplona. So it's fun for people to be able to kind of bring a little bit of their travel into their world. And I'm so thankful to have public broadcasting to share my love of travel, both on TV and on radio.
Marcus, thanks for the call. Glad you're getting inspiration. If you're willing, take a picture of some of your Rick Steves inspired artwork and email it to us, ideas@wpr.org. We're talking to Rick Steves, host of the public television series Rick Steves Europe and host of the podcast Travel with Rick Steves. He is helping us bring a traveler's mindset in a time where we can't really travel so much. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been able to find or rediscover some wonder in your own hometown, in your own home? Has staying close to home made you more aware or appreciative of things that are close to you that you don't have to fly or drive to? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our conversation with public television and podcast host Rick Steves, travel writer extraordinaire. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Rick says we can bring a traveler's mindset to our pandemic lifestyle. Even if we can't travel, we can have that attitude to enjoy life in our homes and nearby. Call in at 800-642-1234. If you've been doing something like this, let's go back to your calls now. Julie is with us in Appleton. Julie, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share, I'm someone who has always liked to travel and go somewhere for a long period of time and just stay and just sort of live life there. And I miss that. But I found a website over the weekend that I found so poignant. It's called windowswap.com.
Oh, yeah.
It's window-swap.com. And what it is anyone in the world can share the view from out their window. You post a video of about 10 minutes, audio and visual. And when you go on the site, you just click through and you can just literally look out people's windows all over the world, which right now just feels really meaningful, kind of sad, but also
Julie,
really beautiful and exciting.
I saw this too, and I got to say I had an emotional reaction, you know, watching a rainstorm outside of somebody's window in India, or, you know, a view of a window out of Berlin. It was very touching. You too?
Oh, I love
Absolutely.
That. That's a great idea, Julie.
Thank you, Julie, for the call. Rick, online isn't the same as real, but there's something there.
Well, we got to be creative right now to get us through this. And I go through a series. When I'm in Europe, I love to open the shutter in the morning. Sometimes I travel around so fast, I almost have to try to go, now, where am I today? And I throw open the shutters. You know, they've got these wonderful wooden louvered shutters, and I throw them open, and then there's this beautiful scene out the window, and the light is warm as the sun is low in the sky. It's a beautiful thing, and I just love that idea that Julie mentioned. I gotta say, we're dealing with a lot of people that are homesick for their travels. And you mentioned you've got a cool thing at your station, Rob, where you share people's photographs. We made a poster called Europe's Top 20 No Travel Tips. I put it on my Facebook page at Rick Steves on Facebook. And we asked everybody to, how can you bring a little bit of Europe into your house just so you can get through this lockdown? And, you know, it's just a goofy list of 20 favorite tips. When your quarantine partner asks for water, you can say gas or no gas. When your kids get into the car, you can say mind the gap. You know, if you're missing all those wonderful European fountains, you can throw coins into your neighbor's bird bath and on and on. So that's something, if you wanted to put it on your website, you could, but people can find that on our Facebook page.
I love it. Thanks so much for that call, Julie. I'm right there with you. Tom joins us next in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hi, Mr. Steves. First, I want to thank you for the contributions you've made with your travel programs. I traveled in my early 20s overseas for a couple of years. I haven't been back, so I actually watch your programs just to keep up on things. But also
nice.
Particularly, your history of fascism in Europe. It's a very powerful program. I would recommend that to all of our American viewers, listeners now. It's an excellent program. I've watched that many times, and I think I've slowly begun to understand the implications for the United States.
You know, Tom, but that is so, thank you for bringing that up, because I'm a historian, and I really firmly believe that we can learn from history. History is speaking to us. And Europe learned a lot the hard way back in the 1930s. And there are wannabe autocrats all over this world right now, both on the left and on the right, that read out of kind of the same playbook about how they can derail their democracies. So we produced this show, and it was a surprise hit on public television. And it's just a one-hour look at the lessons that Europe learned from fascism, as half of Europe was fascist. It wasn't just Germany, you know. And it's just fascinating. And you mentioned you can watch it several times. It's so poignant. It's so real. And again, people can search for that, or they can find it on my website. And it's just Rick Steves Fascism, basically. And it is quite timely.
Tom, thanks a lot for that call. And that makes me think, Rick, we can do some studying up now, even if we're not there, so that if and when we get to travel again, we're not just getting the surface stuff. We're kind of understanding how what we see fits into the deeper history of the place.
You know, so often I started my career, Rob, giving budget travel tips. You know, everybody wanted to know the cheap tricks. And that was my thing back, you know, 30, 40 years ago. Now I find that, you know, the price is about the same, but you can get double the experience if you bring some context to it, if you know what you're looking at. And that's sort of the high-minded approach I have to tour guiding. And I'm so thankful to have public television, public broadcasting for my platform, because on your station, both radio and on TV, public television, you know, we can assume an attention span. We can respect people's intellect, and we can create programming not driven by a passion for keeping advertisers happy, but driven simply by a passion for inspiring people to reach out and embrace the world and celebrate the diversity and get out of their comfort zone. And in that way, you know, travel, thoughtful travel, and public broadcasting are kindred spirits. And now it's a beautiful time to reach out through public broadcasting, reach out through, you know, the books you read and the things you learn to be more comfortable with the rest of our world. And I find that, you know, there's a lot of fearful people in the United States, and there's a lot of people that are less fearful. And I think the most fearful people are the people who have no passports, who's not have the opportunity to travel, and whose worldview is shaped by commercial news media more than actual experience. And for me, to get out there, and as I'm blessed and privileged to do, spend a lot of time overseas, 4 months a year, ever since I was a kid, I know that you know, fear is for people who don't get out very much. And the flip side of fear is understanding. We gain understanding when we reach out, whether through, you know, thoughtful media or through travel itself. And we realize we're 4% of this planet, but there's 96% out there. And it just makes sense to get to know them. And it makes you a more positive person. I find the world's filled with beautiful people and a lot of joy and a lot of love. And I know that because I'm out there talking to people. I was just in Guatemala and Ethiopia and Egypt in the last season, enjoying great travels there, bringing home those shows for public broadcasting.
Talking to Rick Steves, travel writer and public TV host. Time for one more caller. I think Abigail is with us in Spooner. Abigail, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about Abigail?
Well, we moved to Spooner 4 years ago when we retired. And we live on the Yellow River, and we have kayaked every year. But this year, because we can't travel, we've made the river our travel. And we pay more attention to the colors. The water is real clear on the Yellow River, and we actually get out of our kayaks and walk in the river alongside of our kayaks and feel the mud in our toes and pick up stones and really appreciate the river much more than we ever did when we were out and about and traveling. And now with the colors starting to change a little bit, it's going to be glorious. And it just, you realize how much you have right in your backyard.
I love it.
Abigail, that's beautiful. I love that. And I've done the same thing, Abigail. I walked through the old historic cemetery in my town as a tourist would, and I learned a lot. I've never done that in my whole life. I've read the historic plaques in my town about each of the buildings. My friend and I took a kayak ride down the local little stream here, and we picked blackberries accessible only by kayak. And you know, it's just a chance to, I walked through the green space, a little park 6 blocks from my house, and it's got old growth forest in there, and I'd never ventured in there even though I've driven by it all my life. There's so much right here to celebrate and appreciate. And then when we're able to travel again, and I'm sure that day will come, we can do that as well. But for the time being, it's really important that we are patient and embrace the science and work together as a community so we can make our country, you know, safe and healthy, and then we're open again to the world.
Thanks for that call. And Rick, thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, Rob. And as I say these days, happy travels, even if we're just staying home for a while.
Wonderful. Rick Steves is the author of a travel guidebook series, host of Rick Steves Europe, the public TV series, and he hosts the podcast Travel with Rick Steves. He joined us to talk about how he's been traveling at home in his own community since the pandemic began. Coming up after the news, you'll hear some new programs starting Monday here on the Ideas Network and on WPR's News and Music Network, too. We'll get the details. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Governor Evers is calling for a special legislative session on police reform. Meanwhile, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is creating a task force on racial disparities. Coming up, we'll look at the political fallout of the shooting of Jacob Blake by Kenosha police and the subsequent violence in the city. First, starting on Monday, you'll hear some changes in programming on both the Wisconsin Public Radio's broadcast networks, WPR's NPR News and Music Network, and here on the Ideas Network. So we thought it was a good time to talk to the directors of each network so they can share what's going to be new and different. Peter Bryant is Program Director of Wisconsin Public Radio's NPR News and Music Network, and Cheryl Gasser is the Director of the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Cheryl, good to talk with you.
Glad to be with you, Rob.
And Peter, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here, too. Thank you.
Peter, before we get into some of the specific program changes, what kind of considerations go into decisions like these as you're changing around the clock for the shows?
That's a really good question, and there's no one answer to that. Every situation is different, but we take a lot of things into account, including feedback that we get from listeners. We look at what seems like it would fit best with the schedule. We talk to our colleagues a lot. There's a lot of back and forth about that. But we also, it has to be said, we do spend a lot of time talking about what's consistent with our mission as a public broadcaster. That's something we do take seriously. So that's an important factor when we're making decisions. It's not just filling a hole. It's what can we do that will be consistent with our mission and advance our service and serve people.
Well, let's look at some of the ways we're trying to do that. Let's start, Cheryl, with the Ideas Network on the weekends. Some changes were kind of handed to us in some ways because a couple shows are going out of production. What's going away, first of all?
What's Going Away is live from here with Chris Thiele. That's airing both on both networks from 5 to 7 on Saturdays, and also Only a Game, NPR and WBUR's sports show, airs currently at 7 o'clock on Sunday mornings, and that's just on the Ideas Network. But that's going out of production because, as you might imagine, during a pandemic when there's not much in the way of sports, it's hard to produce a weekly sports show.
So what kind of new things are we going to be hearing on weekends then on the Ideas Network?
Well, for the most part, the weekend schedules remain the same, but we are going to be moving around some existing programs to new times, and we are adding a new show to our lineup that is On Being with Krista Tippett, and that will air Sunday mornings at 6.
Tell us a little more about that show, On Being.
Yeah, On Being is, it's always great to add a new show to the lineup. And On Being with Krista Tippett is a show that comes to us out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, so our neighbor to the west. It's been a show that listeners have asked for quite a long time, and we simply haven't had a spot for it in our schedule. But we're adding it at 6 o'clock on Sunday mornings, and Krista will bring us conversations about art, poetry, science, and spirituality.
I just want to actually read some very beautiful words that you wrote about time and memory. Time is, of course, doing its steady work on every object ever made. This complex relationship between the maker and emotionally invested object and the growing distance between them is not new, only rediscovered each generation. I love this. Whether by an artist, a mourner, a mother, or a soldier. These objects ask very human moral questions. What right do we have to forget? What do we owe to each other's memories?
And we've talked to Krista Tippett here on Central Time. I think it's going to be a great show. Looking forward to having it on our weekend lineup. Peter, let's stay on weekends right now. Some changes on our news and classical network, especially with A Higher Ground with Jonathan Overby.
That's right. That will be moving from its current time slot on the News and Music Network, which is 7 to 11 p.m. on Saturdays. It'll move to 5 to 9 p.m., so it will give more people, we hope, a chance to hear really the most eclectic, wide-ranging music show that we have on the air, and it's great that it's a locally produced one, and Jonathan has wonderful expertise with world music, and there's always a lot of variety, not only in the different types of music represented, but the styles too, a little bit of everything from folk to classical to more contemporary music. It's a lot of fun, and it'll be neat for more people to have a chance to hear it.
And with Higher Ground, it works a little different if you're in the Milwaukee area or beyond. Can you sort that out for us, Peter?
Sure. It's statewide on the NPR News and Music Network. On the Ideas Network, it airs in Milwaukee and will continue to do so, and it will stay in the 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. time slot that it has right now.
And Peter, with all these shakeups going on the other network, I say the other network, we're the Ideas Network. I know you don't like to be called the other network. Your network, Peter. Peter gives us a hard time, I should say, to listeners. But anyway, your network, Peter, is going to remain pretty much the same as it is on weekdays. Is that right?
Correct. For right now, the one change is the new start time for Higher Ground.
Now, Cheryl, let's turn to weekdays on the Ideas Network. This is maybe some of the biggest changes people are going to see. Let's take it a step at a time here. First of all, the morning show, no change there, right?
That's right. The morning show will continue to be heard from 6 until 9 each morning. Nothing is changing there.
And then 9 a.m., people might be familiar with what's going to happen there. What's going on?
Right. From 9 until 11, you'll hear 1A, which currently airs in the afternoon. But that's a rebroadcast. And now, starting next week, listeners can hear the show live at 9 o'clock, Monday through Friday. Currently On Point is broadcast there, but that show is going down to a production of 1 hour a day. So you'll be able to hear 1A live, 9 to 11.
And there's a relatively new host on 1A. Tell us a little bit about Jen White.
Well, Rob, like you and me, she is a Michigander. She hails from Detroit. Oh. And also, like us, she's a U of M grad, go blue. But more importantly, she has worked in public radio for over 2 decades. And some of that time was spent hosting morning and midday talk shows and popular podcasts at WBEZ in Chicago. So what I'm really excited about is that she has true Midwest roots. And I really think that comes through on the air.
And we'll hear an interview with Jen White tomorrow at 3 here on Central Time. Moving on through the day, Larry Miller Show still from 11 to 12:30, Chapter a Day, still staying there till 1. Then some more changes, Cheryl.
That's right. On Point has announced that they are moving down to just 1 hour a day, 1 hour from 2, and it will be pre-recorded. So it's no longer live in the morning where we broadcast it now, which is one of the big reasons we made the changes that we did. And now On Point will air at 1 o'clock Monday through Thursday, and Meghna Chakrabarty will host the entire week. And that will be followed by the new show, The Takeaway, with Tanzina Vega.
And The Takeaway, that's going to be a little less familiar to WPR listeners. Tell us a little bit about The Takeaway.
I really think listeners will enjoy the mix of topics that they'll hear on the show, everything from politics to the pandemic, but also some lighter topics and some international issues that we don't really focus on a whole lot here on Ideas at the moment outside of the news. Casts. It's also a show that really tries to bridge the divide and bring people together in conversation. Tanzina does a great job of getting people to open up and share their stories, and I think it will be a great lead-in to Central Time.
And we asked you if you're considering educational options like learning pods for your children.
Hi, this is Tracy from Alameda. We have about 12 kids between the ages of 6 and 12 on our street. And they've been playing together through the whole pandemic, and we're considering having backyard classes to keep these kids together so they don't have to go back to school.
Hey, my name is Skylar Davis. I'm from Bradenton, Florida. I am a nanny for a family that is considering one of these pods for their kids' education.
And we'll hear an interview with The Takeaway's host, Tanzina Vega, at this time on Thursday here on Central Time. Then Central Time, as I understand it, currently will stay on the air, Cheryl. Correct me if I'm wrong. But there will be a change at 6 o'clock.
At 6 o'clock, we are going to be airing 1A Plus. 1A Plus is an opportunity for people who missed the live version of 1A, which will now be airing from 9 until 11, to catch up on a best of version from that day's show. So 1A will be on from 9 until 11 every weekday, and 1A Plus weekdays at 6 p.m.
Peter, we'd love to hear from listeners. If people have questions about the programming changes or if they want to offer feedback now or after they've got a chance to check out the new lineup, how can they get in touch with us?
The best thing to do is to contact our audience services department. And in fact, a lot of the feedback that we take into account when making decisions like this comes through them, so it is really helpful when you reach out. You can email listener@wpr.org or call the toll-free number. It's 800-747-7444.
Look forward to hearing from people. And Peter, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Cheryl, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us, Rob.
Peter Bryant is the program director of Wisconsin Public Radio's NPR News and Music Network, and Cheryl Gasser is director of the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. They're with us to share some changes to WPR programming. They'll start next Monday, August 31st. Find more info over at WPR.org. Coming up, we'll take a look at the political reaction here in Wisconsin to the shooting of Jacob Blake by Kenosha police and the violence and protests that followed. That's coming up next here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, COVID-19 has changed the way we shop for groceries. But not that long ago, the supermarket revolutionized what grocery shopping in America looked like. We'll dig into the history of the supermarket and how it's evolved over the years. Now, according to his father, Jacob Blake is paralyzed from the waist down, and doctors do not know if the injury is permanent. Blake is the black man who was shot multiple times by Kenosha police on Sunday, touching off violence and protests in that city and elsewhere. Vehicles and buildings were set on fire last night despite a countywide curfew. Some shops appeared to be looted as well. This afternoon, Governor Evers declared a state of emergency in Wisconsin. Yesterday, he called for a special legislative session to take up his package of police reform bills. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss also announced a task force to address racial disparities. Laurel White joins us for a look at the political response to the events in Kenosha. Laurel is Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter. Laurel, welcome back to the show. Nope.
Thanks
we have
so
Laurel?
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
Oh, there you are. Laurel, what does the state of emergency mean, first of all?
So the state of emergency isn't really anything outside the norm in situations like this. We've seen them happen before. Essentially, it's just the governor taking an extra step to activate National Guard resources or other resources to respond to an emergency situation that's unraveling, you know, in the state, that's happening in the state. So we've seen states of emergency for things like the COVID-19 pandemic. And today it's specifically in response to the protests happening in, you know, Madison and in Kenosha.
Now, Governor Evers had proposed a series of bills related to police reform back in June after the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis and the nationwide protests that started then. Laurel, what do those include?
So this is a fairly sizable package of bills. It's 9 different bills. Kind of a summary is that they address police training requirements. So some of the things in there, it would require statewide use of force standards developed by the Law Enforcement Standards Board in Wisconsin. There would be a requirement for law enforcement officers to complete 8 hours of training on use of force and de-escalation techniques annually. There would be a ban on chokeholds. That's obviously something we've heard a lot about in recent months. A ban on no-knock warrants, same thing there. And also a $1 million grant program for community organizations. So, you know, mostly a focus on police training and sort of how police are equipped to engage with the community.
Governor Evers put those out in June. What was the reaction at the time, especially from the state legislature?
Well, at first, the legislative leaders were pretty quiet about it. Eventually, we were able to get some comments from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss in particular. He talked especially about the chokehold ban in particular. He said that he thought that there was support for passing that in the state assembly. But overall, the leaders have been much slower to take action right now than the governor has been. Speaker Voss said that he thought these are complicated issues and that he really wanted to take some time to find bipartisan consensus on a number of proposals to sort of work through these things and not do anything quickly. He told us earlier this summer that he didn't anticipate any changes related to police training or even racial disparities in Wisconsin until, you know, at the earliest later this year after the election in November. More likely it would be in early 2021 after the new legislative session starts. Speaker Voss has been more available to comment on this kind of thing. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald has been pretty quiet. His office has been pretty slow to respond to requests about where proposals stand in the Senate or what his particular viewpoints are on these individual proposals.
And now this week, after the events in Kenosha, Assembly Speaker Voss announced the creation of a task force on racial disparities, educational opportunities, public safety, and police policies. What do we know about this task force idea so far?
So this is really an extension of what I was talking about before, which is that the speaker says that this is something that's going to take time, sort of deeper analysis, conversation, collaboration between lawmakers to kind of start from square one and figure out what the state can do and wants to do to address these problems. That's an outlook that the governor does not share, that the lieutenant governor doesn't share, and that a number of Democrats disagree with. They say that there are things that we can do right now. Some of those proposals that the governor laid out, for example, that don't really require sort of the additional time that the speaker says is necessary.
Laurel White is with us, Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, talking about state political leaders and their reactions to the shooting in Kenosha this week, police shooting a man there, and the violence and protests that have come about since then. I want to get into some of the political back and forth now. Governor Evers put out a statement Sunday night after Blake was shot. an excerpt. While we do not have all the details yet, what we know for certain, he is not the first black man or person to have been shot or injured or mercilessly killed at the hands of individuals in law enforcement in our state or our country. I want to give a listen to Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes yesterday after the governor called for a special session.
And let me be clear, this was not an accident. This wasn't bad police work. This felt like some sort of vendetta being taken out on a member of our community.
Republicans have been critical of Evers and Barnes since then. Here's a tweet this morning from Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinecke, quoting again, "Two nights of violence in Kenosha. We've seen many tweets, statements from the governor and lieutenant governor condemning the police, but I haven't noticed one yet that condemns the violence and property damage." First of all, have Evers or Barnes addressed that point about the rioting?
So they haven't responded to that criticism. I do think it's important to note that the governor tweeted yesterday, and this is an exact quote from his tweet yesterday, "As folks across the state are making their voices heard, they should be able to assemble and report on these issues without any fear of being unsafe. If you're exercising that right, please do so peacefully, wear your masks, and keep physical distance as best you can." So he did encourage peaceful protest yesterday. He put out an additional statement today that was more direct, kind of leading with that statement up top, you know, urging peaceful protest. So, you know, certainly that criticism is coming from Republicans, but that is something that we've seen the governor voice over the past 24 hours.
And there's been in addition to the policy proposals from the governor and the task force proposal from Speaker Voss, what does the political back and forth look like here between leading Democrats and Republicans?
Well, I think it's also interesting to note just sort of some of the Republican response that we've gotten from these proposals. I mentioned earlier that, you know, Speaker Voss has said they could be supportive of the chokehold ban. Senator Fitzgerald hasn't been as vocal about some of the specific proposals. One of the really interesting Republican state senators on this issue is actually a former law enforcement officer, Senator Van Wongard from Racine. And his comment about some of the governor's specific proposals was that they kind of reinforce negative perceptions of the police because they are practices that are already in place. So, for example, we know that police groups have said that they don't use chokeholds right now, that's not something that is deployed by officers very often at all, if ever. So banning that on a statewide level sort of sends the message that they are being used. So I think that's going to be an interesting part of the debate as this goes forward, sort of Democrats pushing for these safeguards in state law for kind of codifying bans on certain practices, and maybe Republicans, like we heard from Senator Wongard, coming back and saying, well, we don't need to do that because they're already not doing that.
Laurel, what are you watching for to see if anything actually does happen, either with the governor's proposals or with the speaker's task force concept?
So the speaker tweeted today that he has reached out to lawmakers to see who's interested in being a part of the task force. So it looks like that's moving forward. The governor told reporters yesterday that he had spoken with the speaker and the Senate majority leader or reached out to their offices and wasn't getting much traction, I think maybe would be the best word, on the special session that he called for next week. So he doesn't sound like he's terribly optimistic that they will actually convene and take up bills next week. The kind of logistics of a special session are a little bit complicated. The governor called that for Monday, August 31st, but that doesn't mean that lawmakers have to appear in person. It doesn't mean they have to debate anything. It could be as simple as one person coming into the Senate chamber and the Assembly chamber, gaveling in and doing nothing. So I think I'm just going to be closely watching kind of any conversation that would indicate otherwise, that lawmakers might actually be in Madison next week, if so, what they might be doing, and then just keeping an eye on who's stepping forward to be a member of this task force. It's certainly become kind of politicized whether the task force is the right way to talk about these issues or move forward. So it'll be interesting to see which Democrats express interest in being part of it.
Laurel, thanks a lot for joining us, as always.
Absolutely, anytime.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter. We talked to her today about Governor Evers' call for a special session on police reform, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss's racial disparity task force proposal, and other political fallout from the Jacob Blake shooting by police in Kenosha. Here's a mystery story that could remain unanswered. A farmer in Barrie, New York, is the new owner of an unopened safe. The safe was found in his field apparently while he was out of town. Local police had to chase off a crowd that was trying to open the safe with a sledgehammer. This is not apparently an Acme brand safe, so I think this is not a Wile E. Coyote trick gone wrong. The safe had a note on it saying whoever opened it could have what's inside. Now here's the part that caught my attention. If I suddenly had a mystery safe in my possession, I'd be really curious about what was inside of it. Even if it wasn't valuable, even if the thing was empty, I'd want to resolve the mystery. But as reported by WHAM in Rochester, New York, the farmer says he's going to leave it closed. The 500-pound safe has been moved into hiding, and the new owner says he enjoys the sense of mystery. He'd rather think about what could be than open it up and resolve the question. Quote, if you open it, the show is over. In these times with the virus and the politics, it might get people a chance to set their problems or troubles aside and have a lot of fun talking about it. Ultimately, the safe may end up in a local community museum that's still in the planning stages. A safe of mystery. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.